This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning with Khoo Soo Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be discussing the outcome of the Chini by-elections with Ben Sufian, Program Director of the Merdeka Centre. But we are also asking you on Twitter this morning, does Barisan Nasional's win in Chini show that UMNO and PAS have what it takes to win big in the next general elections? Your options are yes, maybe, and no. Vote on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, though, we're turning our attention to the state of the economy because there are no doubts that we are going to see a contraction in the second quarter of the year, but by how much is anyone's guess, and economists believe that things could get much worse than initially expected.
And of course, everybody is looking to see what Dr. Noor Shamsia is going to do tomorrow morning at the MPC, where, you know, as we just discussed with Jeffrey Haley, the market expects consensus at least to have a 25 basis point cut. And he reckons a more than even chance. So let's see what happens as well.
Yeah, I mean, this Reuters poll, they say a slim majority of economists expect the MPC to cut rates by 25 basis. Now, for more analysis on how bad the second quarter could get and predictions for the rest of the year, we speak to Weilian Riwanto, economist at OCBC Bank. Thank you for joining us on the line this morning. Now, second quarter GDP is expected to contract sharply, and you have a prediction, negative 6%, which is rather severe. So, in your view, what's the drag on the economy?
Sure. I think, funny enough, I actually spent half an hour earlier talking to someone who asked me why my prediction of minus 6% is so optimistic, because you saw that poll by Bloomberg suggests that median expectation by analysts overall looking at growth as low as negative 8.4. So we do not have a magic crystal ball when it comes to predicting growth. What we have is models that are based on historical numbers, and this is basically predicating on when things are behaving normally. As you know, things are hardly normal these days. So I think all these numbers are, I would say, upfront, do take it with a pinch of salt. What I can tell you is that the negative 6% that I have in mind basically takes into account the fact that I think about one half of the Q2 will be very bad and the other half will be not as bad. What I mean here is that April up to early May, basically Malaysia as a whole went through the toughest part of the MCO restriction orders. And then, by early May, they're just exiting from it. So that period is very painful, not just because we all had to stay at home and stay at four walls or trying to stay sane. It's also a painful one for the economy because, as you know, factories are shut, retail malls are shut, pretty much the economy was in standstill. So if the whole quarter had been like that, I think double-digit contraction, in fact, would have been par for the course. Thankfully, I think the second half was not like that, meaning starting from especially later half of May into month of June, the economy in Malaysia did open up, at first rather carefully, I would say, but as you step, especially throughout June, I think normalization became more normal in that sense. We see that from Apple's traffic data. Well, KL residents now go out and about, nearly the same level as early March before this whole mess began. We also saw improvement in the PMI readings. The last print for the month of June, in fact, went above 50, meaning a clear-cut majority of factory owners see improvement in sentiment and outlook. So that predicates basically our numbers. I think this is basically what the best that we can do in terms of guesstimating at this point.
Yeah, well, taking another look at one of your guesstimates, Weilian, you also have a more optimistic projection of full-year GDP for 2020 compared to others like the World Bank, but you still expect a contraction. So what accounts for this?
Yeah, so essentially we do see, a recovery in second half that's coming through. As with this, I think basically we're not able to escape a technical recession where we have two quarters of consecutive quarters of negative growth. So we do have negative 6 for Q2, we do have negative 2 for Q3, meaning we're going to see basically still technical recession. For the year as a whole, we see recovery coming through in Q4 that is more forceful, about 3% or so. So as a whole, arithmetically, essentially it comes up to negative 1. I do not know the quarterly projections by World Bank and including the sister institution at IMF. I would say the institutions tend to project quite early on, meaning they might have taken in data as of April, as of early May. Like I said, those are the worst of the quarter. So they kind of be perhaps a project forward from that. So overall, let's put it this way, 2020 is never going to be a pretty year for anybody. But we are just hopeful that second half, as we step into it, has indeed seen quite a bit of, you know, at least some green shoots, at least some, you know, more optimistic signs that economic recovery is taking place. Not a whole lot different from April and May, but we do see essentially things panning out to be a lot better than before.
And William, which sectors do you think will contribute to this anticipated recovery towards the year end? And conversely, which sectors will then flounder?
Sure. I think one of the key differences between, you know, Q2 and Q3 and Q4, basically the first half, the second half, would be the manufacturing sector that's geared towards exports. As we know, you know, net demand was basically worse than zero for a while now because major economies went to lockdown and there's simply, you know, no demand from anywhere. So even if we could have opened the factories during the MCO period for some reason, there's simply no demand to be fulfilled by our production. That is about to change. That has indeed been changing, especially as we go into the quarter that we're in now in Q3. And so exports are going to become a net contributor to growth, especially in the later part of Q3 and stepping into Q4. So that's a key difference. I think on the flip side, I would say that investment activities would stay quite curtailed. No one wants to commit to big projects, especially now. So businesses will be likely, you know, even if they have the money, they want to make sure they continue to have money in case of a double dip, you know, in terms of global growth and global demand in the second half. So the caution that prevails will definitely curtail a lot of investment activity. So we don't think that's going to come back anytime soon. Consumption will be kind of in between. It is now the largest piece of pie when it comes to, you know, Malaysian economy, so that it matters. I think it's basically a battle between how confident people are now in going out and spending again versus their fear of, you know, touch with catching the virus, and also at the end of the day, they got to care about their own household balance sheet. And again, if employment prospects stay okay, people might be spending more and more again. But that's really that's the biggest question mark that we have as we try to project into the second half of the year.
So, William, looking ahead to the Monetary Policy Committee meeting tomorrow, do you think we'll see Bank Negara cutting rates again?
We see Bank Negara actually holding rate, unchanged at 2% for now. Well, at the broad level, there are reasons to expect them to cut. I know a lot of my peers do expect them to cut rate even this time around. You know, on the surface, you know, growth is weak, inflation is low, in fact, as low as negative 2.9% year-on-year, the last two prints. So technically speaking, there is space to cut. My sense, however, is that they'll wait to see whether the economic recovery momentum that we are seeing now is good enough. So having cut rate, you know, the last time they met, they cut by 50 basis points, and the aggregate basis already cut by 100 basis points. So they have done what they could in terms of trying to get growth going. So it makes sense for them to at least, you know, wait and see for now. At the end of the day, I think if they do want to cut, you know, they might want to do it in September. There's also the time when, as we know, the 6 months loans moratorium, where SMEs and households don't have to service their loans, that period is ending. So I think they probably get more, I would say, bang for the buck from any interest rate cut around that time rather than in July.
And recently, S&P downgraded Malaysia's outlook from stable to negative while keeping the rating unchanged. Now, is there a risk that we will actually see a sovereign downgrade? And what will the impact be if that were to happen?
Sure. I think right now, no, we do not see that the outlook change itself will result in an actual ratings downgrade just yet. Rating agencies, look, they've been accused for being behind the curve before, especially after Lehman crisis. So it does make sense to us that they are at least doing their job to be a bit more proactive and looking ahead, sort of signaling some warning ahead if Malaysia, alongside other countries, do not do anything to try to remedy the growth situation and the fiscal situation, then there's a risk of downgrade. Still, unless growth dynamics weaken considerably, perhaps due, again, like I mentioned, to all these risk factors globally resulting in double dip in second half, such that fiscal situation worsens a lot further by end of the year, I think the risk of an actual downgrade remains to us fairly low. So even if, say, touch wood, there is a downgrade, it is also worth noting that Malaysia still has some buffer within investment grade because it is rated A-. So it's basically three notches above investment grade and sub-investment grade cutoff. So even if touch wood, there is a downgrade, there will be some effect, but it's not going to be a big effect. Because at the end of the day, What really matters in investors' perspective is really the cutoff between investment grade and sub-investment grade more than the gradations in between.
And that was William Wiranto, economist at OCBC Bank. So Chuang, what do you think about what he said? Do you think the economy is going to be just negative one for 2020? He's rather optimistic, I have to say.
Well, I've never held much stock in GDP numbers, right? Because how can you capture the entire production and economic capacity of an entire country with one single number? It is never going to be accurate. It is never going to be empirically representative of what happens within the nation. So, I mean, it's like inflation, right? But you get the general feel that numbers, the GDP numbers generally, they don't reflect what's happening on the ground, okay?
It's a lagging indicator.
It's a lagging indicator, right? And you can tell when the government tells you inflation is, oh, it's only benign at 2.5%, but your tet tarik cost, you know, 3 ringgit over 2 ringgit a year ago. They'll say, you know, nonsense, right? So I've never held much stock in economic numbers, but the numbers people, they like to do that. So it is what it is.
Well, they are indicators, if anything, right? They give us a gauge in terms of how the economy is doing. My worry, or my number one indicator at this current moment, is unemployment, because that's real. And unfortunately, it is also a lagging indicator. But the point about Malaysia is that if unemployment continues to rise above the, 5% that currently MIER is saying, we will be facing tougher times. And bear in mind, we're in a little bit of this kind of cloud, because we have this loan moratorium that's going to go on till September. Now, the pain really happens after September.
Yeah, so now there's obviously Guaning calling for an extension of the loan moratorium, which will obviously find some support among society. But what is not also discussed within society is the fact that the loan moratorium has a social implication. There's a mental implication on you, because you don't have that pressure of your loan installments to pay.
It gives you that breathing space.
It gives you a breathing space, but it also makes you complacent. It makes you a bit lazy. It also means that you put some of the surplus funds to a non-productive means.
The stock market, for example,
right? The rubber glove guys had a huge run. And how much of that is because they didn't have to pay their loan, right?
Well, I think we'll be discussing this more, but nonetheless, up next we'll be speaking to Alex Capri, Visiting Senior Fellow at the NUS Business School, on trade wars and the rise of tech nationalism. That's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.